Welcome to the McGuffin Men. I'm Alex. And with me, as usual, is James.
That's what you sounded like at the start.
No, I got it. Thank you. It was not tricky to understand. Yeah, before we get started, check out our website, themcguffinmen.com. Also, follow us on Twitter, at themcguffinmen. Also, tell your friends about us. Give us a review on iTunes. We recommend 5 stars. And tell your friends again, because they probably forgot, because people today are pretty forgetful. So yeah, we'll get to the theme song, and then we'll be talking about a movie.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
All right, James.
Yes, yes.
It's time to take the blood bucket challenge.
Oh, I had a nice bucket joke, too. Oh,
did you? Okay, we'll pretend that didn't happen.
Okay, fine.
Hey, James, what are we talking about here today?
We're talking about Carrie.
Oh, okay, cool. That's a good film.
Yeah. Don't just be, like, waiting.
That's how I'm supposed to do things, right? Like, just... always sound like I'm waiting for a joke to come.
No,
that's a good straight man, right?
That's how you podcast, right? Yeah, we were talking about Carrie, the 1976 feel good comedy of the year.
Yep. It's
No, 1976, very famous horror movie, directed by Brian De Palma, mm-hmm. and based on the novel Push by Sapphire. Based on the novel by Stephen King. Why is our like horror movie so lighthearted? What's happening?
I don't know. I think we were talking for too long before the podcast, and now we're just in the swing of our normal conversations.
A little peek behind the curtains for you people.
Yeah, exactly. This episode will be even more inaccessible than our usual episodes because of it.
Okay. How are you, Alex? Let's get into it.
I'm great. This ISIS shit is crazy, right?
Yeah, okay. We are talking about Carrie.
Yeah.
Stephen King's first published novel, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And now kind of the film is something of a classic in the horror genre.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this movie spoofed, or parts of this movie, pretty much one part of this movie, kind of spoofed and referenced in so many things, and it still had like some very pleasant surprises for me watching this movie. And obviously, you know, not pleasant, but it was I enjoyed this movie a lot. I'd never seen this. Had you?
No, I watched it on Tuesday night for the first time, just because I've been in kind of a Brian De Palma phase. And
Snake Eyes 4 times, and then this.
No, I watched another. Like, I watched Blowout, which is another John Travolta, Nancy Allen joint. Anyway, yeah, so I've just been kind of going through Brian De Palma's movies, and I just sort of put it on late at night and was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through a whole movie. And then I was thinking about maybe I shouldn't watch this movie. And then I watched the first 5 minutes of this movie and I was like, I'm not turning this off. This is this is some next level weirdness that has started this film. And honestly, like I was totally like, I find this movie baffling and incredible and I love it, even though parts of it are so confusing to me. Like, it's so weird, but I am a huge fan of this movie.
Right. And
I mean, the first thing the next morning, like, this is the movie we should talk about this week.
Yeah. We did The Shining, which is another Stephen King novel. Mm-hmm. We haven't done a lot of horror movies though.
No, exactly.
And, I
think the next closest thing is Seven.
Yeah, well, and I described a horror war movie recently. Yeah, but as I said, like, you know, we both seem to enjoy it. It made a lot of money when it came out. Like, it was made for $1.8 million and made $33 million. Mm-hmm. And as I said, you know, having seen it spoofed in so many things, it's really a part of the horror genre. Like, it's very culturally important.
Yeah, well, and didn't Adam Sandler name an album after they're all gonna laugh at you line?
Yes, that was one of my many surprises watching this movie. Yeah. I did not know where that was from. And yeah, so when that came up, that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you kind of had a bit of kind of back and forth watching this. At least you described it as kind of baffling at times, but then very good. And then what was like, what's that back and forth for you?
Well, okay. It was unflinchingly weird, which I really appreciated. just tons of shit that I have never seen in a movie before. And also the thing that was often baffling was I don't think any character was consistently written. Like it was, people seemed to be all over the place. There were weird comedy scenes that seemed to come out of nowhere that were also still funny. And the music got crazy in those scenes. And I don't know. It's such a hard movie to unpack because it seems to change dramatically from scene to scene sometimes. And but it's always really engaging, and I think it all, for the most part, kind of ties in. And I don't know, it felt like such a scattershot movie to watch that I'm surprised that it feels like it has such an interesting point, you know?
Yeah, there, you said it was unflinchingly weird, and you also described that first scene as weird. The tone of the first scene does not carry out through this movie. Like, it's different kinds of weird than what that first scene is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then there are just 45 seconds of this movie that'll come in chunks that seem like it's just cut out of, like, the wackiest high school, like, sex comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
And, just out of nowhere that lead to nothing. But, yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it, and I thought there was a point to it, and... yeah, it is scattered, but I do think that there is definitely a core to it. I don't know if the movie would be hurt by eliminating some of those kind of zanier moments, but...
I don't think it would be hurt, but I don't think it's necessarily worse for them being there. Because the thing is, like, they're kind of funny. Like, so there were some... I had some good chuckles in the gym class detention. I thought was really funny. And that was particularly well shot. Like, of all the gags, that was the part that was, like, really well put together. But I don't know. I thought there was some funny stuff, you know?
Yeah, the tux shopping where they go to the tux. That's just out of an entirely different movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I get the feeling that Brian De Palma, who directed this, had a lot of fun making this. And it's not kind of a traditionally fun movie because it is so dark and heavy for most of it. But, you know, you get some crazy visuals, you get some good laughs. I guess most horror movies do kind of have those moments of comedy, though, so it's not so unheard of.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of the they make you feel comfortable so that they can scare the shit out of you even more later on, right?
Yeah. But it's still just, I still think it is a very odd horror movie.
Exactly. And I think like the most unsettling parts aren't really or to me at least, aren't the more like traditionally horror-y scenes, you know, they're not the scenes where with her mom at the end of the movie weren't nearly as uncomfortable for me as the lead up to the bucket of blood, which is so like hard to watch, even though you're not watching the event. The thing that's hard to watch is her unknowingly walking towards the event that you already know. Like it was so intense.
Yeah. And it's just having grown up with this movie, you know, having already been around our whole life, it's the part of the movie that you see coming the most. Mm-hmm. And it's still the lead up to that is, yeah, just really cringe inducing to watch.
Yeah. And I think that because it seems like all of the posters for this movie as it was coming out, that was something that they really marketed. So it's not just us having lived in a world where this movie has existed for our entire lives as a part of culture. But I think they actively played it up in the marketing so that everybody knew about it. But I mean, it was a filmmaking choice to let the audience in on it long before the bucket actually gets dumped. And I think that's a really, really smart choice and something that really kind of goes away from the normal way to do horror, which is to surprise you with the event as opposed to terrify you by telling you what the event is going to be a long time before it actually happens.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess I didn't think of that. But yeah, it's all over all the promotional materials. It's sort of covered with blood. I think a part of that is that there aren't really a lot of kind of shocking images in this movie outside of that prom scene, though.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a really, intense, like a lot of intense visuals. I mean, particularly her in the blood-covered dress. That's a good way to sell a horror movie, you know?
Yeah, no, but you're right. This movie gets so much of its value on the build-up. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
We know within. Okay, so let's go through it. We have that first scene with her playing volleyball and she gets told to eat shit, which was kind of funny to me.
I think that's a really good scene too, because I think it really sets the tone for the movie, because it starts with this, it's a long take or medium long take where we see the whole gym class playing one game of volleyball, and then the camera cranes in and we focus on Carrie just as she's fucking up the shot. And that's when we see her become socially ostracized from the group. She gets cut out of the shot to be the only person in the shot. And then she screws up, and then we find out why everybody around her seems to hate her. It's because she can't return a serve, I guess. I thought that was a really, really good, interesting shot to start the movie. But I'm sorry that I cut you off.
No, it's fine. It's kind of what I was getting at. Like, we see her in complete isolation, thematically within one shot. We get kind of where the rest of this movie is going. Then we get her, the shower scene, it's, you know, a bunch of what are supposed to be teenage girls, either half naked or completely naked, running around a change room in slow-mo. But the slow-mo and just the music and everything, it's, you know, it's not remotely uncomfortable. Yeah. And
it's weird, though. There's something weird about that scene.
Oh, 100%. You know, Carrie getting her first period, not knowing what it is, and being terrified, and then everyone kind of ganging up on her. And, you know, so we see that she has a pretty bad life. People already don't like her before this, but this is kind of just the first illustration of exactly how poorly she gets treated.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's not much long after that, okay, so, you know, everyone's mean to her, but the kids get suspended or threatened with not being able to go to prom.
Yeah. But they already paid the DJ, so.
Right. But then, you know, I think we're 20 minutes into this movie, maybe a bit more, and we know that they're going to get revenge on Carrie, even though clearly she does not deserve to have revenge visited upon her.
Yeah, exactly.
We know something's coming, and that's, you know, the majority of this movie is just the almost literal bloodbath, at least the blood shower and its aftermath. We're just in suspense of that. And I mean, we have these moments of Carrie and her mom that are clearly uncomfortable in, you know, a non-traditional horror movie kind of way, just a terrible upbringing and, you know, her being thrown into the closet and things like that. And, you know, these are all awful and unpleasant scenes, but not, you know, in the traditional horror sense. And yeah, it's all just this build up to something, you know, through the promotional material, through just the fact that these girls are actively discussing doing something to her, and we see them kind of planning it out and getting the blood and getting their boyfriends to ask her out or whatever. And then it's just this kind of impending disaster, and that's where this movie lives, and I think it does a great job in there. And then when the payoff actually comes, it's such a juxtaposition to anything you've seen before. Like, you see a small amount of menstrual blood. That's pretty much it for blood, you know, for this whole movie until that really big prom scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so it's this weird kind of back and forth where Carrie hates her life, or, you know, seemingly hates her school life and probably her home life too. Mm-hmm. And then when Tommy asks her out and she goes to prom and, you know, she gets some help from that teacher too, it kind of is this cathartic redemption, like all of those shitty 4 years of high school go away, and, you know, they seem temporarily gone, and there's some really nice moments of her and Tommy together dancing. Particular, I thought that, like, that moment I thought really rang true. Like, it seems like all this terrible shit she's had to suffer through is undone, only to have it, you know, almost literally dumped right back on her.
Yeah.
And like, it's just terrible. And then like a brief glimpse of how good it could have been this whole time and maybe how good the future is going to be. And then absolute shit.
Yeah. No, it's blood.
Right. But it's just a really interesting way to put together a horror movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I 100% agree.
I guess we should talk about her and her mom, or Piper Laurie as her mom a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. I found the mother character kind of interesting. Like, the one thing I found, or the, a couple things that I found really interesting about the mother character were, I mean, Carrie doesn't seem to outwardly hate her mother. She never sort of has that big scene where she's like, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, and then like slams the door and runs out of the room, which I found interesting. And the other thing I found really interesting is that even though her mother is abusive and hits her, throws her in the closet, that time pretty early on in the movie where Carrie breaks her mirror, her mom immediately comes upstairs to check on her. And I found that, I don't know, I found that pretty interesting. And I mean, they don't really do anything with it. It's just the fact that she comes up to check on her with a pretty good, pretty decent amount of speed is interesting given the way we see the rest of her character play out, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think just an extremely misguided person.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
There, it's not like, here's a good example, Cinderella's stepsisters or whatever. It's not like they're just, she's just being mean to her because she only cares about herself. She just has this genuine religious belief that, you know, is extremely damaging to her child. But it seems to be a loving, albeit extremely twisted relationship between the two. As you said, like, you don't get that scene of, I hate you, mom, like, I can't wait till I'm 18 and can move out. And you don't get that, you know, oh, you're just a piece of shit. Like, she, you know, certainly speaks down to her as a woman, too.
Yeah.
But that's... Yeah. but I don't want to sound like I'm defending any of her actions or anything, but it's coming from a very misguided place of love and concern. At least
exactly.
That's how it appears.
Her just definition of love and concern concerns Jesus first, you know, more than her child, right?
Yeah, and, you know, having dinner in front of a Last painting, Last Supper painting and five candles.
I love that shot so much.
Yeah. Throwing coffee in her face.
Oh, the coffee. That's bananas.
That I did absolutely not see coming. Like,
no, because why would you see that coming?
But and I think it works. Like, I didn't laugh. It wasn't like one of those zany moments I was referencing. It's just, it's so immediate and so dark. And just the mother is so genuinely twisted. You know, like, oh, take off that dress, we'll burn it together and pray for forgiveness. Like, that sounds like a fun mother-daughter activity. Yeah. Doesn't it?
Sorry guys, can't go to the prom. Burning a dress and praying with my mom. Yeah,
with my mom. The mother just finding sexuality extremely dirty. And you know, what we later learn is her only exposure to sexuality is being raped by a drunk person. We can kind of see where she's coming from. But I mean, those are, you know, unsettling, awful scenes. But again, we don't get, other than coffee in the face, we don't get a lot of the violence. There's a lot of slapping in this movie.
Oh, there's
though,
so much slapping in this movie.
Tons
women slapping girls, girls slapping girls, girls slapping women, John Travolta slapping girls.
Like, that was the biggest surprise for me. I did not know John Travolta was in this movie.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I didn't. And
did you assume he would know how to drink a beer when he was past that beer?
Oh my god, like, just the cut to his smiling face. And I think Travolta's just a goofy looking person, especially when
absolutely.
And he's just smiling, and oh my god, that was such a laugh for me. And I mean, that's, you know, not the filmmaker's fault. If you didn't have the exposure to him, you wouldn't that shouldn't be as funny as it was. But man,
yeah, it's Collins. I'm sorry,
Miss Collins.
Yeah, what about
the gym teacher?
What about her?
Oh, fantastic.
Like, as an actress?
No, just the character.
Oh. She's one of those characters whose motivations didn't seem to be clearly defined to me.
Oh, no?
No. Are you saying that sarcastically? I could never tell anymore.
Oh wait, it'll show me how her character or her motivations are a little muddied to you.
One slaps character, or sorry, slaps Carrie.
Yeah, but that again, that's just misguided love.
James, I'm starting to get real, real concerned.
Things are getting real Stockholm syndrome around here.
And then she's like really verbally abusive to all the students after, which, you know, to an extent I can understand. They do something, I don't know, pretty crazy. But I mean, Mrs. Collins is not like, it's not like she did nothing, you know, she literally physically assaulted Carrie, you know. And then out of nowhere, she seems to turn into this maternal figure for Carrie, like telling her, well, you should go to the prom with Tommy or whatever. And then trying to she's all that her and like telling her to put on some makeup, which is weird. Because like the scene with her on the bench is kind of like, as an isolated scene, is kind of nice. And then he's like, oh, we just need to give you a makeover. And then at the dance, she's like a full on mother. And
100% by the time it's the dance
and giving advice, like glowingly looking on as her daughter wins prom queen and then trying to protect her. And then I don't know. Well, again, I guess that's the last thing she really does other than die. But yeah, it was just all over the place.
Okay.
And as soon as like after the she's all that scene, like I think they cut from that to her having her conversation with Sue and Tommy about why Tommy's inviting Carrie to the dance. And she just talks about Carrie behind her back. Like, it's just, I don't know, just inconsistent.
I think that scene of the three of them, of Miss Collins, Tommy, and Sue, I think she's acting in a, I think, I don't know, I think she's a pretty good character there.
Like, I think she's all right, but I can't recall, but I feel like, you know, I can't recall exact quotes, but I feel like she says something that's kind of putting Carrie on mild blast, shall we say.
I think that that's kind of one of the genuine, like really genuine parts of this movie for me, is that that's a teacher we don't see a lot who is, like in movies, I mean, who, like that character, that teacher character should be in every movie with a plot even close to She's All That. Yeah. Like these teachers know what the kids are doing or should know. Like they understand a lot about the kids' relationships with each other, where if this girl who never speaks and no one ever speaks to her and is pretty awkward is all of a sudden going out with to prom with someone who first of all has a girlfriend,
yeah,
second of all is, you know, the kind of classic good looking jock character, yeah. A smart, actually any teacher in a real life scenario would see that that's there's something up here, and she genuinely seems to care about Carrie and is trying to protect her. And I thought that was a kind of a real moment where she was like, why are you doing this? And they're like, oh, you can ask anyone you want to prom. And it's like, yeah, I know you can, but why are you doing this?
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of something genuine, that a teacher character we don't see a lot, that made a lot of sense to me.
Okay.
And then, you know, she tells some kids they can choke on their gum. And, you know, she's just a great gal all around.
Yeah. Misguided love. That's the term you're using, right?
Yeah. By the way, I feel like this is going to be played, like, in a trial of mine later on.
Oh, let's just skip past this and move on to the next part.
Edit that out.
Yeah.
Put myself on blast there. Yeah.
No, you're going to put yourself on the stand and then have evidence against you.
What other kind of like surprises or those like kind of goofy out there moments did you find in this?
A lot of slapping.
Tons of slapping.
I know we've addressed the slapping, but there is a lot of slapping in this film.
Like, there's even that like playful John Travolta slap in the car that's like really light and playful, but it's like, you can't do that.
When he hits his girlfriend twice?
Yeah.
I don't know that we could call that light and playful.
Maybe it wasn't that one, but there
he
was
slaps her in the face.
But they're like goofing around, aren't they?
No, that is much further than goofing around.
There is one slap in this movie that like looks kind of light, but has the same volume of all the other slaps.
I can assure you the one you are thinking of is not John Travolta slapping a woman.
Okay.
Because that will be a part of a trial, is you saying that somewhere along the line. That season, what? Sorry.
No, just their whole like car. Everything with John Travolta and that girl is insane.
Yeah, though no, that scene's bonkers because, you know, they start the scene by hanging out just, you know, normally. Then we find out John Travolta is incapable of drinking out of cans. And then they park the car, have an argument, and then John Travolta slaps her twice, and then seems to be attempting to rape her, and then she gives him a very talkative blowjob. It was like that scene was really confusing.
Well, yeah, then he tries to leave, and then she starts to seduce him, and then like fights him off when he tries to kiss her.
Yeah.
And then yeah, like enunciates so well with a dick in her mouth. Like it is insane. Like
I strongly suspect that was sort of a censors thing. Like it's not as talkative in the scene at that point, but they kind of had to put in dialogue because this is 1976 and people couldn't handle that yet, I guess.
So she's just checking out his belt buckle.
Yeah, exactly.
Zooming in and out with her full body.
Yeah. And it says Carrie White on it, and that's how she's reminded of how she hates Carrie White. Perfect.
Yeah, that part was, oh man, that was that a whole weird scene. Yeah, like very, very weird.
Yeah.
What did you think of the idea of Sue and Tommy not like really being in on the whole prank?
I thought it was cool.
Yeah, I love that. And that was something.
And I think it adds a good element to the movie.
Yeah. And again, like kind of having seen that scene in so many different forms, I was completely unaware that it wasn't like the whole school against Carrie waiting for like, you know, she's just the one that everyone hates. And they were waiting for the best time to laugh at her all together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it adds another nice element to the sort of theme of the movie, which is I think the question is of this movie is, who is to blame for what happens in this film? And I think there are so many options, and I don't think this movie gives you an answer, and I think that's what's interesting. I think the whole development of the movie is sort of about creating this environment where everybody at the prom is at least some way responsible for what happens, because, you know, there's the a lot of the things we've touched on already, teachers for creating this sort of culture of violence and hatred. The English teacher is a dick to Tommy as well. The mother for her quote unquote misguided love, not raising Carrie to be a normally sociable person. I feel like that's sort of at least a little bit of a maternal responsibility or a parental responsibility, I suppose, is to raise a child in a way that's kind of sociable, you know?
Yeah, and the one part I wanted to say about how Carrie was raised and, you know, what leads to such embarrassment is when she menstruates in the shower, she just freaks out because she had no idea this was ever going to happen to her.
Absolutely.
And she thought she was bleeding to death. And it wasn't, you know, when she does talk to her mom about it eventually, because the teacher called, mm-hmm. the mom does, you know, her whole Bible thing about how, you know, that's like, that's evil and that's, you know, showing because you've sinned. But she doesn't even give her the heads up that it's ever going to happen. It's like, you know what I mean? It's not like, you know, you've sinned, so this thing's going to come out of your body at one point, just a heads up. she completely leaves her in the dark. And I couldn't imagine just how terrifying that would be to have that happen at all, let alone in public with no clue that it's ever going to happen to you, even though it almost certainly is.
Yeah. Yeah. And exactly. That's the interesting thing about, or one of the many interesting things about that mother character, is just her unwillingness to raise Carrie in a way that, I don't know, doesn't doom Carrie, you know?
Yeah, no, she just had no hope.
Yeah, exactly. And going on the idea of blame in this movie, I mean, the kids, pretty much every kid in this film is at some point an asshole to Carrie. Carrie, I mean, straight up murders people. And then there's the Tommy Ross and Sue Snell aspect of it, where you know, are they to blame for kind of being ignorant of the whole situation and not understanding that there might be something sinister going on? And I think there are all of these ideas are really well presented in this really subtle way, and there are even little things you know, more traditional things throughout the movie where Tommy and Sue are watching a James Garner Western on television. You know, it's violence on TV to blame. That's pretty, like, they never really address it, but it's a violent scene that Tommy is watching on TV, and maybe that injects something in our heads. And then there's when Carrie's mother goes to visit Sue's mother towards the beginning of the movie, there's a conversation in the background of TV playing where people are arguing about who is to blame, and I found that really interesting. And everybody, I think the two, I think it's two people in an argument. You never see what's happening on screen, but I think it's two people saying, "Oh, I'm not at fault here. You're at fault," and then vice versa. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, no, I never thought about that, but that's a good point. And then even that that mother character who kind of seems to know Carrie's mom is kind of nuts, mm-hmm. and you know, is obviously aware that Carrie's being raised by a single mother, and that mother is kind of a little religiously crazy, and kind of just hopes, you know, I'll donate some money and then she'll go away, and then this is no longer my problem.
Yeah, and also enjoys a midday drink, apparently, which is generally not in film is not seen as a good sign, you know, for a character.
No, absolutely.
Alcoholism is rarely treated as a positive thing in film. yeah, and I think they're just, I think this whole movie is about the fact that there are so many factors that come into play with a person going so far off the deep end, like Harry does, that no one person can be assigned blame for any of it. And I think that's really interesting, like the society you are raised in raises you at least a little bit. I think that's the most interesting thing about Carrie is the idea that we're all kind of responsible for everybody in some way. And I found that really interesting. And for such a small, short pointed movie, I feel like it has, I don't know, it really has a very large point to it and a very large question. And I enjoy that a lot. And I think that's the question that Sue's struggling with at the end is who's to blame? It might be me, you know?
Yeah, and Sue is one of our better characters, at least after 15 minutes. She kind of has a change of heart and doesn't want anything to do with being mean to Carrie anymore.
Yeah.
Because she is in with all those girls being mean to her at the start, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think so, yeah. Her and Maria Bamford mixed with Lori Petty.
Okay.
Yeah. That one was for you. That's for an audience of one.
No, you're right. That's a good point. It is something I was thinking about a lot with this movie. There's just this huge spectrum of blame and responsibility because, you know, I watch this prom scene and Carrie, you know, goes crazy and just starts killing everybody. And we kind of see, I think we're meant to take that scene of everyone laughing at her as mostly inside her head.
I think
we see the teacher, our good teacher, Miss Collins, laughing. She wouldn't laugh.
Yeah, that's true. Yep, that's a good point.
Like, I think a lot of that. I mean, I bet there was a few kids who laughed. Definitely the ones responsible for it. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of that stuff is just through Carrie's point of view, and these people aren't. Most of them, I think, would just be stunned and surprised. But she sees them all laughing at them, and I think it's just her, you know, her mother's voice in her head saying they're all going to laugh at you. Just kind of drove her a little nuts and made her see things that weren't really there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she kills everyone there. And I started thinking, like, oh, well, that's too bad because she's, you know, we see her kill some of the people who are responsible. Tommy seems to die, who I think is one of our better characters, at least. Like,
yeah, I mean, his fault is being ignorant, you know?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, what does he do bad in this movie?
He doesn't actively do anything bad, but he still might be doing something bad. Yeah, you know,
exactly.
by not actively doing anything.
Exactly, and that's what I was thinking. Oh, well, that's an innocent person, but then you think back to high school and you think, you know, maybe I wasn't the one, you know, pouring pig blood on the guy, but I was aware it was happening, and you know, I saw these people consistently get treated like shit and just did nothing to stop it. And you know, for that reason we're all kind of implicit. And then, you know, it just got me thinking of, you know, everyone there is kind of guilty in a way, as you were saying, just for being part of that culture and, you know, allowing it to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think kind of one of the bigger points I took from this movie is, you know, those people still are less, definitely less guilty. Like, it's, there are people, what's her name, who sneaks into the prom and is like...
Sue.
Oh, no, no, sorry, not Sue. The main evil girl.
Oh, Chris.
Chris, yeah, because it's a girl. you know, she's definitely more guilty than some. And, you know, we kind of want her to get her comeuppance in a way. And then, you know, everybody gets it. And, you know, you just kind of think like, okay, so let's try to trace this back. Carrie's mom was mean to her, which kind of made her a much different student than the rest of the students. So everyone's mean to Carrie. Mm-hmm. And then she ends up killing someone responsible and also a bunch of other people. And it's just... how many people get involved when a situation like is allowed to get this out of control? And maybe there are some truly innocent people there, or some truly innocent people, you know, died trying to fight the fire or something. Yeah. It's just when anybody kind of gets to this point, revenge gets out of control very quickly. And there's no kind of direct way to just only get back at the people who've hurt you. It's these things have a domino effect. And obviously we don't see things like this in real life, but it just, you know, like a good movie does, it points to these kind of larger issues where maybe no one's innocent, but everyone's going to get it anyway. And that's kind of something that I didn't this movie kind of presented a lot of things I didn't really expect to find in a horror movie that, even though I hadn't seen, I kind of thought I knew in and out anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. So what's with the recent Brian De Palma kick for you?
Well, I watched Snake Eyes.
Boom.
It was just sort of a thing that a friend of mine, Chase, sent me this list, I'm sure that he found on Reddit, of like 10 really impressive long takes. And the beginning of Snake Eyes is 12 minutes of a long take. I mean, there's like 5 or 6 cuts in it somewhere, but it's still put together as if it's one long take. It is incredibly impressive. Even if it was just the way characters go up and down stairs with a steady cam moving so smoothly beside them, it would have blown my mind. But anyway, Snake Eyes was just stylistically bonkers, even with its problems. And then I was just like, I would like to watch the majority of this filmmaker's other films. And then I did. And I've always really liked Mission Impossible. And so far, I'm finding it a really rewarding phase.
Yeah, he's...
Sorry?
De Palma's all over the place. Like, he starts out in horror, but then, like, Mission Impossible, Carlito's Way, Untouchables, yeah. Snake Eyes. Like, he just, you know, kind of made his bones in horror, but really kind of ran with it and did a lot of different things with it.
Yeah, he kind of likes living in the world of suspense for the most part. He's directed a war movie as well, Casualties of War, which I haven't seen yet. But yeah, I think his favorite place to be is suspense. And so far, what I'm learning is that is what he's best at.
Yeah, and there's not...
He's just a really good, stylish filmmaker that, you know, he doesn't like to cut more than he needs to, which is something I really appreciate. But I know I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, a quick note about De Palma, actually, when I was just researching him. Do you know the story of kind of where he bases his love of voyeurism and of partially of filmmaking? A specific childhood incident?
No.
Okay, so his parents got divorced because his mother accused his father of infidelity. Mm-hmm. And so young Brian De Palma like stalked his dad for a few days with recording equipment trying to confirm his mother's suspicions.
Yeah.
Which to me is a crazy story, but you know, we kind of get these feelings of kind of isolation and betrayal and voyeurism, which is a bit less present in this, and definitely very present in a lot of his other movies.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Watch Blowout for further.
Yeah, I just thought that was a crazy thing. But you talked a bit about his visual style, and I said earlier, kind of just looking at this from a purely visual perspective, he had. Looks like tons of fun putting this movie together, which is obviously a very dark movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, we've got some crazy things. We've got when they're tuxedo shopping and he just fast forwards like 3 lines of dialogue.
Yeah, that was weird. There's a few
interesting
things.
Choice.
Yeah, there's a few things that in this like that are just sort of like just fix it in post things that I really hate. Like when they were getting that towards the end, as the house is being eaten up by the earth, as we're getting that slow zoom in on the Jesus in the closet, and they're shaking the film strip. Like they're not shaking the camera, they're shaking the film strip after the fact, and how they do the rollover with Johnny T and Nancy Allen.
I want to know what you thought of that.
I hated it. I hated it. And we talked about the dance with Tommy Ross with that spinning Steadicam that speeds up.
Yeah.
I like the idea of it a lot. I don't know that I like watching it because it's just, it gets a little too spinny for me. Yeah. As far as the swirling Steadicam goes, though, I think that's peak. That's pretty much as good as it gets. I just have such a problem with spinning Steadicam.
Okay. That was like one of my favorite, I mean, as far as visual moments of the whole movie, and maybe it was just kind of the relief of a like genuinely positive moment in Carrie's life.
Yeah.
Because everything up to that is total shit.
Yeah.
But you know, as I said before, like it kind of just seems like all those last 4 years of high school are just undoing, and that things are like, she kind of, for the first time in a while, seems like she has a hope for the future. And I just thought, you know, the different colored lights and the kind of tinfoil covered stars having a lot of like reflecting a lot of different lights and the low angle.
And the way the camera speeds up as things, it's sort of like it's kind of like washing her problems away, more or less. And she's getting swept up in the moment is kind of the idea behind that shot. And that, I like that. I just, I don't know. There's just something about it that in practice, there was something that rubbed me the wrong way about it.
Yeah. Oh, that's fine. And I read someone's interpretation of the speeding up camera as things getting out of control, like Tommy thinking he's kind of doing this nice thing, and Tommy seemingly genuinely enjoying this person's company.
Yeah.
And unwittingly being part of this horrible, horrible plan. Mm-hmm. I thought that moment was like really, really well done and really sweet. And I thought just to get that one really kind of nice, beautiful, emotionally sincere moment right before you know everything's going to go to shit, I thought really, I think it really helped the impact of when, you know, the inevitable happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about his split screens, which he is kind of famous for?
Yeah, I'm not crazy about them in this movie. I feel like they don't make this movie better. I think the kaleidoscope effect is fine. When, as you're saying, we are in Carrie's head, hearing all the laughter that's going on in her mind. I like the kaleidoscope effect. I think that's fine.
Oh, see, I thought you'd hate that.
See, I think it's a little hacky, but I like the idea. And I feel like in 1976, I can give him a pass for it.
Yeah. Well, and Stephen King, when asked about this movie, said it's dated now, but it's actually pretty good. And I think you kind of see that with some of the visuals and kind of some of those zanier things. I think it's just the time period and that kind of happened. And even the best movies have moments that seem dated.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think the themes of this movie are dated at all. I think that the big themes of this movie are incredibly...
well, they're like, pretty timeless. Like,
yeah, absolutely. That's the thing that really amazed me about this movie was just... I thought I was in for a history lesson, like a De Palma history lesson, and I was learning things about the human condition. It was very good. It was a big surprise.
I mean, then you get a girl who's got like a rainbow on her hat and a cloud on the other side of her hat, and you remember it's the 70s again. But,
yeah, exactly. But going to
the, overall, fantastic.
Going to the split screen, wasn't crazy about it in this movie, just because I feel like in that point, cutting from Carrie's face to the door, I feel like it would have been more effective for me, I think. But how do you feel? Like, and then there are some split screens in Blowout that I liked. But Blowout's a worse movie than this, but it's still got its moments. What did you feel about the split screen?
Much stuff happening at that point. I'm split on it. I'll try not to use that voice ever again here. No, it is just so much was happening, and it was a part of the movie I was kind of simultaneously anticipating and really surprised by. Mm-hmm. As I said, like, we know Carrie's going to get the blood poured on her, and we know she has telekinetic powers, that she's going to get really pissed off, and shit's going to go down. I did not know the scale or the manner in which the shit would
or
go down.
How prominently a hose would be featured in it.
Yeah, and again, like, I think that's just the dated thing. There are a couple of things that seem a little off.
Yeah.
But overall, pretty cool. I love that it was kind of as big as it was. Like, I love that the whole school gets taken down. I love that those people who, you know, like Miss Collins and some just people who don't seem to be actively involved in this scheme, you know, burn to death or get like thrown into three tables and die on impact. I did like that stuff about it, but there was just so much going on. And then the split screen, like, it was just a lot to take in. But I, you know, I think maybe, you know, that's part of it. That's a choice, and it is a lot of shit happening very quickly. It's a very chaotic scene to, and I mean like a scene, if you were there, like it would be complete chaos to be part of it. So I think it works. I can't say I love it, but I you know, it wouldn't be what I would take out of this movie if I had to, start trying to fix it or something.
Fair enough.
Not that it needs fixing.
Yeah, exactly.
What about his prominent Alfred Hitchcock love?
Oh yeah, I mean, more, it's always prominent with De Palma. Like, it's even there in Mission Impossible. But this movie is, as far as De Palma movies I've seen, is far and away the most prominent. The high school is called Bates High School, right?
Yeah.
The crazy mother character.
Yep.
And psycho music.
and not even like variations on a theme, or this was inspired by, like, this was the same like four violin notes from the psycho soundtrack.
Yeah. And I think one of the interesting things about the way it ties Psycho into itself, I guess, is that Psycho's place in film history, in horror movie history, it's really interesting because it's where we kind of get a murderer, where we get like that famous scene at towards the end of Psycho, where we get the psychologist explaining Norman Bates's thought process. And that's something we don't get in Carrie, and I think it makes Carrie a better movie. Like, it made Psycho doing that made it a better movie, and Carrie not doing that, I think, makes it a better movie. And I think it was interesting that Carrie used so much Psycho and then chose not to use what I think is kind of the defining thing about Psycho.
You like that part of Psycho?
It's as part of its place in history, I think it's the defining thing about Psycho.
I don't think I understand.
Like, it's the first time that there was sort of this backstory for the killer that was explained after the fact, as opposed to seeing the origin story, more or less, you know?
Oh, I see. Yeah. I think the speech is just so redundant and unnecessary.
Yeah. I'm not arguing for its quality. I'm arguing for its place in history.
Oh, okay.
Which is very much valid.
I got you.
Yeah. And I think the fact that Carrie doesn't do that, and the fact that we get these moments of telekinesis that are never explained, I think are really interesting, and continue to further the idea of the questions behind who is really responsible for what happens in Bates High School.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Another question for you.
Okay.
Aren't girls just the worst people?
Oh my God. Right. Yeah. This is another thing I'm learning about Brian De Palma. Questionable opinions on women. Holy shit, man. This is like this movie was bad for that. Like, there's a lot of I don't know. That's what I was saying with the opening credit sequence as we're going through the locker room. I was like, there's something problematic about this.
Well, is it that we're looking at naked what are supposed to be teenagers?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly part of it, but also sort of the execution. It wasn't just the idea. There was something so gleeful about the execution of it. You know, like, maybe I would hate it or be less bothered by it if it wasn't shot in slow motion. But yeah, it was just weird.
De Palma has many detractors who will quickly call him a misogynist.
Yeah. Well, I think, which I don't think is always a crazy word for him.
It's not as though we have a bunch of fantastic male characters and then a bunch of horrible female characters between, though.
Not in Carrie, no. It's just kind of, I don't know, there's because there is no real... male hero in this movie. The closest we get is Tommy, and Tommy does not escape blameless, you know?
I think he's pretty good, but...
Yeah, but still the inaction thing.
True. The principal sucks.
Well, yeah. Principal sucks. English teacher sucks. So John Travolta's not great. He's a pig murderer.
True.
And I mean, it's not like this movie has a Luke Skywalker character, but you know, it's still there are some problematic views of women in this film. Specifically that scene that we talked about earlier with John Travolta and Nancy Allen in the car.
As like the seductress getting her men to do her evil bidding.
Yeah, and then getting slapped and then still whatever. I don't let's just move on.
Yeah, I mean, men are largely absent from this picture. Like Carrie doesn't have a dad. Sue Snell's dad is completely unaccounted for.
He sits at the dinner table for mere moments in that one scene.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, it's just there's just not a lot of men, not a lot of strong men. And then when we look at the women, they are again like a pretty negative view on women, I think. You know, we talked about Miss Collins, who kind of has some positive traits, but definitely some strong negative ones as well. It kind of seems like she maybe has a change of character and changes her mind partway through. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to try to defend her any more than I already have. But I was kind of reading someone's reviews of kind of De Palma's career and some of the gender roles in his movies. And they're talking about Carrie and saying how just that first scene, that locker room scene we were talking about, we have all these women running around like pretty free, you know, no men around, doing whatever they want, wearing as much clothes, kind of like goofing around. Having fun, and then kind of left to their own devices, they turn on each other. Yeah. And, you know, they can play and laugh, but that they can also be very exclusive and violent and, you know, publicly shaming this girl for, you know, her womanhood, it seems like, you know, having her period, and then, you know, shaming her very publicly because of it.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of discussion of his views of gender. I didn't know if you had any input on it.
Yeah, I don't feel as strongly as some, but I don't think the criticism is totally misplaced.
Yeah, it's just it's such a, I mean, obviously we have a female star, but we have mostly female characters. And the kind of inciting incident in this is menstruation. Like it's having your first period, and obviously, there'd be a million other things that we could have to incite this kind of public shaming of her. But I think, you know, there's a reason. And we see this in a lot of horror movies, like vampire werewolf movies involving female characters. It's their menstruation that makes them powerful. Like, that seems to be the moment she gains telekinesis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's sort of the... it's the coming of age moment for her. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just she becomes powerful as she becomes a woman, but the best or the most neutral reading of this, or maybe the most, Palma positive reading of this is, if you're not raised properly, if there isn't someone there to take care of you and teach you these things, those things can be overwhelming and lead to negative consequences. Yeah. And obviously this movie, like kind of all the horror movies that deal with the subject, really take that idea to the umpteenth degree. But it's at its core, it's just you need positive role models.
Yeah.
You need someone to teach you about these things, and you need someone to love and care for you. So when, you know, these things happen and these changes happen to you, you're not ashamed by them, and you're not going to be become the subject of ridicule because of your lack of knowledge on it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's kind of a female empowering thing, or at least a gender positive kind of view of it. But when a movie like this comes out and it's just so loaded with gender politics, there's tons of ways to read them. And, you know, I kind of took a positive one there, but I would agree with probably 10,000 very, very negative readings of this movie as well. But
yeah.
I just think that there's a ton of stuff in this movie, and way more than I was expecting. And, you know, as you said, just a lot kind of packed in there and tons of things to think about for what I thought was just going to be kind of a goofy horror flick.
Yeah, and we haven't even touched on this movie's opinions of Christianity or how it presents it. And it does. I don't think it presents it as entirely evil. I don't think it presents it as necessarily something good. I think it really makes an argument for finding a happy medium between the word of God and what is actually practical in life. And because I don't think Carrie ever really renounces religion, and her mother goes to the far end of the spectrum, but Carrie is still very much a pretty she never seems to stop believing in God in the film, or seeing that it's a huge problem. It's just sort of the way her mother practices is a big problem.
I thought about that too. It's I think you could look at it both ways. You could look at it as anti-religious, but you could also just look at it as anti-fanatical religion.
Yeah.
Like, it's, but there's just a lack of a positive Christian character. And I think when you say that, her mom's on the one end of the spectrum, we never really get that counterpoint of someone who deals with Christianity in a healthy way. And your argument that we don't get that moment where Carrie renounces religion or something like that, I think Carrie's dead when the blood pours on her. Like, I think we've lost that character. Mm-hmm. I don't a redemption kind of after that moment, I think, would have been really upsetting to both of us. I don't think we get the chance for her to say religion's all well and good as long as you don't go crazy with it like my mom did. I think
I'm not saying the movie needed that. I'm just saying the fact that she never says otherwise, even when her mom is punishing her and making her pray. She never really objects to the more religious aspects of her life.
True, which could just be a sign of her complete brainwashing into it, which I would take as anti-religious.
Hmm. Well, I mean, there's just sort of the I could see your fun pillows or whatever the mom says.
And dirty then, pillows.
Or dirty pillows.
Not
sorry.
Fun pillows.
My bad. And her just sort of being like, no, they're breasts. Like, it's just sort of a more modern way of explaining what her mom is saying, you know?
Yeah, and
She's not a fanatic, and she's slightly more progressive just by not being fanatic.
Yeah, true. She never really kind of has that secular moment where she kind of rejects God and rejects God and goes back to normal or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. I think
it would have been way too much.
Yeah, and I think the movie is more interesting because it doesn't have that, because it gives you both sides. And if she rejected God, I mean, obviously this movie's views on Christianity would become pretty... pretty cut and dry.
Absolutely. She just crucifies her mom with knives
in
the kitchen,
exactly.
And leaves you to make up your own mind about what it means.
Exactly.
Got anything more?
Nope.
Cool. Oh, that wasn't Jesus in the closet, by the way.
Oh, whatever.
Whatever.
Religion. You're the one that went to church.
Bullshit.
You're the one that went to church, all right? You're the God expert here. Who was it?
Saint Sebastian.
Oh, okay. My favorite of the saints. Well, it's him and Drew Brees. Thank you.
Saint J.F. Sebastian. Truly your favorite saint.
Thank you for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com, for older content, and follow us on Twitter to find out about new content. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.